ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of One Perfect Game, the podcast about video games and the people who play them. My name is Matt Tilby, and it is an absolute pleasure to be recording once again live from PAX Australia 2019. We're here on the show floor. It's a bit loud, a bit deafening at this point in time, but we are covered up nicely and soundly in the Audio Technica booth here. Big thanks to the guys at Audio Technica for allowing us to do this once again. And I've got a guest here who's had a bit of a familiarity with the brand, of course. His name is Brendan White. He founded the 8-Bit Collective, a large conglomerate, I'd say, of podcasters and presenters and content creators, all creating a bunch of wonderful things. And I actually co-host with this man on our new podcast, Hoop Dreams. If you're an NBA fan or a basketball fan in general, we record, I would say, semi-regularly, fortnightly. That's probably as best as we can say, but I'm here with him now in the 8-Bit booth. Brendan, how you doing?
I am doing really good. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Card-carrying member of the Audio Technica Collective, as you can see. I think I'm part owner of this booth. I've got naming rights here on the wall front there, but I'm excited. Intel or ASUS behind us need to shut the fuck up. Like, I don't know what's going on.
It's deafening.
No one cares about your shitty sticks of RAM. We're here to talk about perfect games, or one perfect game in particular, so I'm excited to be on our One Perfect Game today. It's Friday morning, the sun is shining, you're looking chipper, you got a gleam in your eye.
Is that just good? My glasses I'm wearing, or is that just...
Maybe it's the slight hungoverness that we're all sharing as well, you know? It's been a rocky start, but a fun start.
Day minus one was an interesting day for all of us. You get in all right?
Did. Got in the afternoon, had to drop the little man and then the dog off to school and the dog sitter and all that kind of stuff. You know, all the annoying semantics you have to factor in when you become an adult.
Yeah.
So it was all that, but got in without a hitch. Got into our Airbnb, but we found out today we've got an ironing board but no iron. So I need to take it up with Daniel, our stays, I should say. We didn't use Airbnb. First time using stays with a Z. And no iron, so it's off to a rocky start, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's never a good way to start off, but interesting. We will start off talking about, I guess, your foundations. Because normally when I invite a guest on, I talk about their sort of current career path and what they've been doing recently. Obviously, we've started up Hoop Dreams, and it's been a lot of fun over the last couple of months, and with the NBA season nearing its eventual beginning. It seems like it's been taking ages for it to start, but
I blame the Hong Kong China situation to the delays.
Rocky for sure,
you know,
but
it's very tumultuous out there on the courts.
Yeah, but let's take it all the way back to when you, I guess, had the idea to start 8-Bit. So obviously,
okay,
8-Bit is not your, I guess, your job at this point.
No.
It's purely a hobby.
Yeah, it'd be nice if it was the full-time job, but sadly, you know, podcasting and dreams don't pay the bills for the most part, but we're getting there. You know, we're chipping away. It's been something that's been floating around my head for the better part of 5 or 6 years, but it's only really kicked on about 4 years or so ago now.
Yeah.
So,
because I was actually going to ask when you sort of had the idea. When was that?
So about... I've always been pretty hyperactive. I've always had, like, side projects ever since... Well, even during school, I always had little side hustles and things going on.
Yeah.
And I've grown up loving video games, loving pop culture, and just loving having those conversations with people, whether it be offline, online, sort of like what we're doing right now in podcast format. And just sort of talking to a few friends, talking to Reese and Sam, who are co-founder of The Hungry Gamers with me. And we're just sort of riffing one day, and like, why don't we turn this into a podcast? You know, we played a lot of games online together, played a lot of games like local co-op, and just, you know, gaming is a big part of our lives. So let's chuck it into an MP3 and see if it takes. And, you know, we've done 168 episodes now. A few have been lost to the ether over the years, obviously due to various things. But, I think I've done probably over 200 podcast episodes now over the last 4 years. So it's certainly keeping me busy, but it's just good fun, man. Like, there's so many good stories that you can share and be part of. Like, everyone here at PAX on this show floor, everyone's got a different story about how they got into gaming, what they enjoy doing, their hobbies, their pet hates, you know, their dirty little secrets as far as games that they love or despise. So You know, it's great to walk packs and just bump into all these people from different walks of lives. We're all here with the same sort of goal and focus, and that's sort of this gaming pop culture space.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing that I actually hadn't asked you before is, obviously when you started 8-Bit, you know, this wasn't your job, as I'd mentioned.
No.
What was your job, or is your current job?
So I work in electronic security. So I design security systems for the government, for defense, for high-end commercials. So
okay.
Most like sort of high-end or high security based buildings around the country have had my fingerprints involved in them, for lack of a better term. Like, we're talking physical security, so access control, security cameras, video analytics, all that
right,
kind of stuff.
Okay.
So do stuff for like defense, for like parliament, government bodies, corrections, mining, industry, all that. So that's my 9-to-5, and then the 8-bit stuff's where I can fit it in around that 9-to-5.
6 till midnight,
yeah.
Essentially.
You know how it is, man. Like, yeah. You just got to make hay while the sun shines. So you record, you film, you do whatever you can when you can.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it's a busy schedule for you.
Yeah, like it's a little less busy to a degree now, because I used to work for a company, and I was the Australia New Zealand business development manager, so I was a lot of travel. I was on the road probably 3 weeks in the month.
Oh wow.
Which was shit. Like, people's like, oh, it's cool, you get to go all these places. Like, I'm living out of a suitcase in a hotel. I get no downtime, so it's nice now. I've taken a new job just handling Queensland, so it's a lot more focused on my home more.
Yeah,
I got more time to dabble with these hobbies, spend time with the family, and
you're
just
Melbourne based, aren't you?
Oh man, Brisbane.
Oh, you are
Brisbane. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Brisbane boys, born and bred.
No, not born and bred. I was actually born in Cooma, like in a little sleepy town in the Snowy Mountains, south of Canberra.
Okay.
And I've just gradually worked my way up the East Coast.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, Brisbane's a good place to be anyway, so.
It is. Like, the heat waves are still sort of rattling my cage a little bit during the summer.
Yeah.
But overall, I'm digging it. It's a good change.
As a Brisbane boy, I know it all too well. And I guess now that we're here in Melbourne, I'm probably not dealing with it quite well, but
we've sort of reversed, because I'm sort of cold New South Wales, Sydney predominantly, and you're Brisbane, and we've sort of flipped roles. So
I'm getting a good workout with my jackets, that's for sure. But
you're looking sleek.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I had to go all guns blazing. I might take a photo later.
Yeah.
But almost all Jordan.
If Nike
everything.
Aren't sponsoring you, they're missing out here, because you are ticketed from head to toe at the moment in Nike.
Nike, if you are listening, which you aren't. Yeah, we're happy to market anything, really, for Hoop Dreams. But
mate, we will shill whatever you got going.
Hey, those Jordan 34s came out. Man, I will wear them 24/7, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But now, with 8-Bit coming up quite spectacularly and sort of gaining this really good foothold in the podcasting industry, where to for 8-Bit? Because obviously you guys had just launched a Patreon, which is a really... it seems like it's a really viable option for a lot of people, where the normal sort of content sort of structure isn't too viable. And especially for a podcast where, you know, you might not get that sort of support that's purely from listens and subscribers. Yeah. So it must have been great to sort of start that up.
It's been really good. Like, it's been pretty touching, I think, for all of us. Like, obviously, all these content creators, ourselves included, it is a pretty thankless industry. You know, you're doing it for the love. You're putting in a lot of hours and getting not a lot back all the time. So it's nice to set up this Patreon as a way for people to give back if they wanted to. Like, there's no content locked behind a paywall. I don't believe in that. It's like, you don't have to pay to listen to something. We do have early access for the super keen fans, but then after that fortnightly cycle, it's released to the masses, because, you know, it's not some communist regime here in the 8-bit nation, you know, where we're open, where we're fair, and it's just nice to see people get on board and throw a couple of bucks behind us, because it helps cover hosting costs, travel, hardware, equipment, allows us to do giveaways, allows us to sort of create the highest caliber of content we can.
Yeah, and it's interesting, because like I've always been subscribed to a number of podcasts that have used that Patreon sort of model, and they've been able to, I guess, you know, like you said, provide that base content that everyone loves and enjoys, but you know, people had used extra content for, you know, a small pay. That's not something you're really keen on, is it?
Not really. Like, it's still obviously Patreon. I think it's something that evolves with the community.
Yeah, it's developing. Yeah.
I think what we've got today will probably be different to what we'll have by maybe the end of the year. We're constantly trying to reevaluate whether it be the content we're creating, the opportunities we're giving to our creators or our fans.
Yeah.
Or what we can do to best give back, because I don't think there is one fixed secret sauce. You know, you sort of got to change with the times and be as available as you can on every platform you can. Like, you look at social media now, like, TikTok is all the rage. Like, I still don't really understand what it is. I think it's fine.
Is there a future for 8-bit on TikTok?
Maybe. Like, that's where all the kids are, so maybe we got to jump on TikTok and do, you know, short little videos on there.
Like, it seems like you're missing out.
Yeah, yeah.
The next logical step.
Yeah, lost opportunities already. We need to cut this right now and set up a TikTok account and get out there.
Surprised there's no TikTok booth here at PAX.
There is an Amazon booth here, though, I just noticed.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. It's, yeah. Well, they're fast growing here, of course.
Shout out to Amazon, though. Like, I'm an Amazon Prime member, so I get that free shipping. I get that Twitch Prime subscription I share around every month, you know.
One Perfect Game is not sponsored by Amazon.com, but if you would like to. Amazon, yes. If you are listening, you probably
yes.
are.
Yes, please listen and please
please listen.
Throw some... Well, they sell everything.
Yeah, essentially.
Throw whatever you want at us.
I'll take anything they've got.
Yeah?
So obviously the Patreons come forward, but just in general, what's next for 8-Bit?
I'd still like to sort of increase the amount of content we're churning out. Like, we've got 20-plus content creators under the stable now. We've got over a dozen podcasts, which is great, but... Mm. Maybe some more exclusive content where we can sort of cross over more with the various members of 8-Bit. That's like with the 8-Bit cast, that's sort of what we use that for. As a test bed to get various personalities in to talk about things other than what their podcasts are known for. So
yeah.
It's very free form, open forum discussion about everything but video games and pop culture for the most part.
Yeah.
So more of that. I don't know, like, it'd be great to scale and have like a fixed studio that we can all use and stuff, but because we're all so spread out,
yeah,
sort of wishful thinking, so I don't know, I'd love to get as many of us on like a salary so we could focus on this kind of stuff full time more. That would be the goal, but obviously there's a lot of steps that have to take place before that goal is, you know, becomes fruition, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, no, it's definitely within reach, I think. You've laid the groundwork, so I think that something is coming, I think.
We just got good people, like, and that's the biggest thing with this space, is you want to work with good people, with good like-minded individuals. You know, you're all in it together, and even all these other content creators outside of 8-Bit, like, we're all running the same race. Like, lift one another up, help out where you can, share content, collaborate. You don't need to close yourself off and shit can in the shadows and everything else. Like, it gets you nowhere. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just give everybody the time of day. I think that's the big thing.
And it has been a pleasure working with you, of course.
Mate, that is also not a paid rip. So
I don't get paid by 8-Bit anyway. So
give it time. You're on probation, but once that lifts, you know, the sky is the limit.
Oh, you've excited me now.
Is that Sirius Black? Is he meant to be Sirius Black from Harry Potter?
I think so.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sirius Black.
A couple of interesting characters walking through our Audio Technica booth here. It's never a dull moment at PAX Australia, that's for sure.
No.
I've seen a couple of King DDDs. We're looking out of the window at the moment as a bit of a detour.
Yeah.
I see some Sub-Zeros. You know, there's been... I think I've seen some Tetsuya Naitos for the New Japan Pro Wrestling fans out there, but...
I think we're kind of like animals in the zoo.
Yeah, we kind of are.
In this sort of situation, aren't we?
Yeah.
My back's to them, so I can't see anybody. So.
No, I can see a couple of people having a few confused glances, so... It's always a bit of fun coming through these sorts of spaces. Never really knowing what's going to happen on any particular day or any particular moment, so...
Yeah, yeah.
But let's move on to, I guess, your... formative years with video games, because you were talking about everyone here at PAX has their own stories, their own, you know, starting out period with games.
Yep.
What was your sort of first experiences with games, or the first that you can remember?
My first experiences, like, I won't really sort of talk much on like playing Atari and Commodore 64, because I was like,
because
that really,
sort of ages
really
you a bit.
Young. Oh, and like the memories aren't as sort of fixed in my mind.
Yeah.
So the ones that first come to mind was my uncle. He's 7 years older than me, so when I was, you know, 4 or 5 or whatever else, he was, you know, 10 to 12, and he had a Sega Master System 2.
Okay.
And I remember jumping on and playing a bit of like Alex Kidd, a bit of Wonder Boy.
Yes, yeah.
And that's where I remember first sort of cutting my teeth, and then getting on the NES and playing a bit of Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
A bit of Duck Hunt.
One of my previous episodes I did with Matt O'Kine, the comedian who did Triple J and is now roaming about doing his new book, and all the best to him if he's listening. He was big on Alex Kidd. He loved Alex Kidd and all the older Sega games. So It's always good to hear the name Alex Kidd again.
Like, I just love the fact that you fight bosses with scissors, paper, rock. Like, you know, why don't more games include that kind of functionality?
That weird, bizarre sort of humour about RPG and fighting elements. It's always good fun.
Yeah.
So you started off with the Master System.
Started off in there, but like, I guess my first true console that like I had ownership of was...
Yeah.
I got the SNES or the Super Nintendo.
Oh, yeah. So this is one that you bought with your own money?
No, my parents bought it for me for Christmas.
Yeah.
I was still a young tacker then. I wasn't working yet. I'm not that old. Thank you very much. got the SNES, got, you know, the Mario All-Stars pack in there. And played
classic,
the absolute bejesus out of those. And I remember playing Super Mario Bros. 3 on there with my uncle. He was Mario, I was Luigi, and we did all 8 worlds. Didn't use any whistles, you know, obviously, because you can cheat and sort of skip worlds and things like that.
Yep,
so we just kicked it old school, all 8 worlds, took down Bowser, and that was...
In one go?
Just not in one sitting. It was probably over the span of a few weeks, because he'd come over and stay, or I'd stay over and take the SNES. But that's still probably one of my biggest crowning achievements in gaming, just thinking
it's a
about
good one.
That.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Doing it free of hacks and everything.
Yeah.
And, sort of, Luigi, he's been my boy. Like, I don't mind that he's the number 2 in the Mario Brothers world, but...
Oh, he's coming through a resurgence, so...
Yeah, you know, got his own haunted mansions and things. So.
Yeah, and his own gelatinous...
Yeah.
Apparition.
Yeah, it's certainly something. So, that's where it really started, and, like, went down a pretty deep path with SNES. There were so many games in the back catalogue there, so... Your Donkey Kong Countries...
Yeah.
Even weird ones like Earthworm Jim, Ren and Stimpy. I was big
Earthworm
on Nickelodeon
Jim.
And stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So all those types of quirky shows where the games didn't really translate that well, still loved the absolute crap out of them.
Yeah.
So played a heap of that.
They held up. They're very timeless sort of games. Yeah.
And then Mario Kart. Like, I'm a big Mario Kart fan.
Yeah.
And the original on the SNES, it still holds a spot very near and dear to my heart.
Did your heart grow a few sizes when you found out the Super Nintendo sort of system on the Switch was released?
Yeah.
Was that a big thing for you?
It did. Truth be told, I still haven't played it.
All right.
I haven't played much Switch lately. Like, I've got one. I've got the Nintendo, whatever the... What do they call the live on there?
Nintendo Switch Online?
Yeah, so I've got my Nintendo Switch Online. I got that few... circling back through Amazon Prime with my Twitch Prime subscription.
Yeah.
I got a free 12-month out of that. So thanks, Twitch and Amazon. Not a paid sponsorship. But, I'm keen to give it a go on the Switch and see how it translates.
Yeah.
But I'm all about, you know, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on the Switch now. I've been playing a lot of Mario Kart Tour on the smartphone.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I haven't had the chance. It's... My phone is not up to, I guess, operating standards.
It does not have the processing power.
Well, look, it probably does. It's an old iPhone 6 from a couple of years ago, but my battery is just fried.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you'll need to, like, hardline it in to play.
Yeah, no, 2 minutes of that, and it's just, it's in the pits. So, which is a shame, because I would have loved to have played a little bit of Mario Kart anywhere I wanted to. But
it's all right. Like, it's obviously a watered-down, stripped-back Mario where... You're not worrying about braking, accelerating. You're just, you know, swiping left and right to steer.
That was the weirdest part.
Shooting your items.
Yeah.
But it's a good fun. I play it a lot when I'm pooing. It's a good snap game.
Lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. Wholesome family entertainment.
Yes. So when we move on a couple of years, you're, you know, becoming a teenager. You know, you're going through school. How did things develop from there? What was the best option?
Oh, man. Then segued into the PlayStation.
Mm-hmm.
It was another Christmas purchase. Funnily enough, full white trash story here, but like, I grew up in the country and I sold my semi-automatic 22 rifle to buy my PlayStation because there was the big gun buyback after the Port Arthur massacre and stuff.
Okay.
So my pop bought me a gun for my 5th birthday. So,
oh, wow.
You know, that's some country bumpkin stuff there. So sold that. Bought the PlayStation, got Final Fantasy VII, Colin McRae Rally.
Oh, the Colin McRae Rally games.
Man,
they were my jam when I was younger, that's for sure.
It was ahead of its time, especially like the vehicle damage.
Yes.
And the weathering, like the mud slicking up on the car and stuff. Like, I was blown away as, when was that, like 96? Somewhere around 96, I think. So I was about 10.
Yeah.
And it was mind-blowing as a kid seeing this sort of real-time destruction and damage taking place on these cars.
I was always a big fan of the special stages.
Oh,
the sort of loops and things like that. Now, that was always fun.
Easy left into hard right over jump, and it's just like, yes. Tell me, Colin.
Yeah, I will never be, you know, a co-driver. I just couldn't couldn't live with that fear of giving someone the wrong direction.
It'd be insanely terrifying, wouldn't it? Like, those rally drivers are psychopaths. Like, there's a millimeters between them and hitting a tree. Like,
absolutely.
Australia. Oh, he was a New Zealand icon, Possum Bourne.
Possum Bourne, yeah,
he
absolutely.
Colin McRae also died.
Not through rally, but still.
Maybe it was a ripple effect.
Oh my God.
I'm not. You know, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but who knows? Maybe there's some sort of ripple effect shell shock that he was dealing
with afterwards.
Real
dark here on One Perfect Game. I'm surprised.
Lest we forget, Colin.
Absolutely.
And now it's just dirt, and then it went like the Jim Carnery stuff. Now, like
the dirt rally games. Yeah. The dirt rally games really were, I guess, bringing it back to the basics.
Yeah.
And they were extremely difficult. I played Dirt Rally, the first one, a couple of years back, and I was like, oh man, this is going to take some time to get used to. But yeah, so you've jumped in, PS1.
Yep, she was a beauty in the early 90s there. Really, really enjoying that. And then like Resident Evil.
Yes.
And then Resident Evil 2, which we'll probably talk about in a little bit more detail soon. Maybe.
We'll figure it out.
We're just freestyling here, but like those games were sort of not really career-defining or maybe to a degree. Like, I got a really, really soft spot for Resident Evil.
Are you a big person now as a horror fan? Do you like horror movies and things like that?
Grew up around horror. Like, thanks or maybe middle finger to my mum for introducing me to scary movies at a very young age. So I was very acclimatized to, like, Hellraiser and Pet Sematary and Friday the 13th.
Oh my God.
Like, when I was under 10, like, especially because my uncle too.
Yeah.
Like on Friday nights, way back when I'd sleep over at my grandma's house, we'd watch the Friday the 13th movies on SBS at like 10 p.m. at night and just get scared shitless because I'm like 7 or something watching these things.
That's a baptism of fire if I've ever heard one.
Yeah, so it probably says a lot about how I am today. But love horror and Resident Evil, especially the first one. Just the jump scares, the janky cameras, the tank controls, the cheesy acting and the voice acting especially. And like the some of the real life trailers and things they shot in the opening.
The live action stuff, yeah.
Oh, it's so bad. But you know what? Like, you know, Jill Valentine, the master of lockpicking, stuff like that. it's just fantastic cheese. And I love that they've sort of nodded to that over the generations and still kept a lot of that cheesiness in with a lot of the dialogue.
Yeah.
But Resident Evil's just the business. I love it. I love the remake they did that came out earlier this year. It's just about game of the year for me. It's just like perfection. Everything I wanted and more.
Is it holding up its solid competition to Goose Game?
It's up there. Goose Game's great, but like obviously it's this now cultural phenomenon almost, you know, like Chrissy Teigen talks about it and all these big
7 News has talked about it. Yeah.
Like powder to House like for delivering this game and getting this praise and like knocking Zelda off the top of the Nintendo charts. Like
incredible.
Like that's not small by any means. So that's awesome. But it's all right. Like it's okay. It's a game you play here or there and
just to relax, just have fun.
Yeah, game of the year, no way. But like fun game, yes, very much so.
Definitely a solid fun game. But obviously after the PS1, what came next?
PS2 and the Xbox.
Yeah, also both at the same time?
Yep. So this is where I sort of segued into Team Green fandom, really. Like, if you had to make me choose, like if it was a fork in the road, and it's like, there's the Xbox path, there's the Sony path, I'm taking the Green path. Like, still love Sony, got all their consoles, play all their games. Shout out to Sony for being legends, but I don't know, Xbox just is comfort food for me.
Okay.
And that big, dirty, nasty Duke controller back in the day on the original
Xbox.
Like, I was still young then, so my hands were a bit smaller and just trying to, like, remember how to navigate that type of thing.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It was pretty messy. I had a GameCube in there as well. Because they did the Resident Evil 1 remake.
Yes.
They plugged that on there, and then Resident Evil 4 was an exclusive on there, so I got a GameCube specifically for them. And like WrestleMania 18, I think, might have been on there.
Yes, I remember that one.
And that had Rob Van Dam, who's my homeboy. He's one of my favourites. Yeah, Rob Van Dam, then like Mick Foley's my main man.
Yeah, because we haven't really had the chance to talk wrestling, I guess, on this podcast, and that's probably a conversation for another day. But you like your old school wrestling.
Love my old school wrestling. Obviously the WWF and even like the Monday Night Wars way back when with WCW Nitro and Raw going head-to-head.
Yeah.
So I love that. So I played a ton of wrestling games. Mm. Obviously, like SmackDown and things like that on the PlayStation.
Absolutely.
Way back when, which was pretty revolutionary. Mm. I think it came after No Mercy might have been last one.
Yeah.
And then THQ did SmackDown, right?
They did a lot of the SmackDown games, and then I believe that moved over to 2K.
Yeah. Yeah. And great games.
Absolutely.
Great game. The creator character in that is still some of the most fun I can remember in any gaming. Like,
just the most bizarre.
Yeah. You want to make the most freakish nightmare fuel character in the world? You can do it in a wrestling game.
Like, yeah.
And then you can customize your entrances, your entrance music, your mannerisms, your poses. Like, I'm living out my dreams. Because I, in my high school years, like, I'm like, I'm finishing school, going to America, I'm going to be a professional wrestler, and I'm going to marry Lita. That was like, that was the goal, and I'm like, that's what's happening. Clearly none of that happened. Went to wrestling school for a couple of months.
Yeah.
In Canberra for a little bit, but that's where it ended.
What caused the sudden breakup?
Real life, I guess.
Injuries?
You know, maybe, like, my left knee's a bit janky still from rugby league-related affairs, but wrestling's just the best. Like, it's probably... It's good to a degree, depending on what you're watching these days. Mm. But that 90s into early 2000s era is just peak.
The zenith, it's hard to top, but getting some good stuff recently, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's just move straight on to the game of choice. Of course, we just mentioned it probably about 5 minutes ago.
Spoilers.
Yes. Mr. Brendan White, what game have you chosen for us today?
I've chosen Resident Evil 2.
A classic.
We talked a little bit offline, and I was toying with the thought of Mass Effect or Mass Effect 2 predominantly.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know what, let's kick it. Let's go back to 1998.
Yeah, because obviously, like you had just said, the remake came out really early this year and blew a lot of people away. But I feel like for younger, you know, a younger audience like myself who were probably introduced to the remake first and didn't really get too much of a look in at the original. It's hard to really grasp how crucial or revolutionary that game was to people like yourself.
Yeah, it just nailed everything. Like, it's not often you see in gaming today where sequels can sort of improve and enhance the original. Like, a lot of the time, you know, your original is often the pinnacle of that franchise. Mm. Not so much probably in current gen now, but for years it was always the case. The sequels were usually just watered down cash-ins.
Well, it's everything like, you know, in music, the second album syndrome happens, and it would have been the same sort of thing for games, for the, you know, second game syndrome.
Yeah,
so, what was your sort of first experience with Resident Evil 2? Because we talked about number one, but what about 2?
So my first experience was, it was like still when they had like Australian PlayStation magazine kicking around.
Yes.
And they had a demo for Resident Evil 2. Obviously, the physical disc stuck on the front of the magazines back in the day.
Yes.
And I remember getting that mag solely to play this demo.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember getting home, chucking that disc in, firing it up. You start as Leon Kennedy, obviously rookie Raccoon City Police Department police officer, first day on the job.
Yeah.
Rolling in, all hell's broken loose through Raccoon City.
Yeah, look, not a great day.
No. Like, I'm thinking he probably should have taken that desk job, like, down the road.
Yeah.
Instead of taking this, you know, trying to protect the innocent and whatever else. But I remember just starting it up, and you pull up at this petrol station and you have some pretty scary cutscenes. The animation in the CGI is not that great. Like, the character models aren't anything to write home about, but it is 98, so we're 11 years back now.
Well, it's certainly, you know, obviously with the first one, the first main sort of lasting image is the zombie turning his head very slowly.
Yep.
You sort of get that same sort of thing at the petrol station with the zombies, like, feasting on the brains of the service station attendant.
Yep.
And it's that sort of last, you know, that first big image to really sort of get you in.
Yeah, and I, it just had me hooked from there on. Obviously, you make your way into town, a big petrol tanker goes over, blows up, Claire and Leon are separated, and then the story, like, officially kicks underway, and you're navigating your way through these hordes of, like, zombies that are on fire and shuffling and whatever else. And getting to the gun shop, meeting old Kendo, you get the shotgun there.
Yeah.
It was just great. And I actually did an English assignment based off Resident Evil 2.
Really?
Way back when. And we had to, like, make a movie and put a soundtrack to it and put, like, commentary over it. So I remember I played Korn's Dead Bodies Everywhere over it. And I was playing through the game. It was really hard to capture video. Like, I think I had like a traditional like tape-based video camera just looking directly
set up
at
in front
the telly,
of the TV,
minimalizing
the scan
that
lines
glare.
Coming
yeah.
through. Yeah, no, that's yeah. difficult.
And it sort of added to it too, because then it felt like it was like an 80s slasher film. But yeah, had Korn playing through it and sort of did a bit of voice work over the top of myself. I think it didn't get graded very well. It was probably completely off the brief. I'm like, you know what? Fuck you, Miss D. Like, I love Resident Evil. This is my passion project.
She just doesn't appreciate the horror genre.
No, just couldn't wrap her head around the brilliance of Capcom in the late 90s. But just fantastic game. The jump scares. I just remember, like, when you were talking about that head turn of the zombie in Resident Evil 1 in the mansion. That sort of same, like, oh my god moment is when you see the liquor the first time in the police station.
Yeah.
And it's on the roof and it's hanging, and obviously the saliva and stuff's hanging off it, and then it's like, and it just drops down, big mean claws, big ass tongue, and it just comes at you fast. And it's just like, oh my goodness.
Well, see, there's
oh my goodness.
There's sort of two main things that I'd sort of picked up from the remake. Obviously, like you said, the liquors, and in high definition, they are feisty things. But the other one is, of course, Mr. X.
Yeah.
Now. Yes. Correct me if I'm wrong, he's not named Mr. X in the original, is it?
No,
is he still
not that I remember. Like, I just remember him as the Tyrant. Like,
yeah,
maybe that just happened after the fact.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Mr. X in the current gen version, and he's got his sweet trench coat and his hat. And
he's out for a
very
stroll.
Very ominous, you know, just heavy set footsteps.
Thumping some boots,
And I love that in the Resident Evil games, like especially Nemesis, where you can't really ground the big bad until the very end.
You've always got to be looking over your shoulder. You can't, you know, rest on your laurels and take your time. You've really got to be methodical with it. Yeah. I think that's a really good thing for those games to have. But the other thing as well is the way that they sort of implemented the tank controls, which was something I still probably haven't gotten used to in any game. Tank controls is probably not something, you know, I enjoy, but how is it for you? The controls, obviously.
I think it's just because it's all I knew.
Yeah.
So, like, I can't really say, like, they are bad. And, you know, they're not the smoothest to navigate, but it's because it's what I grew up on. So it just feels familiar. Like, they've got more action traditional shooter controls on RE2 and the other, like, RE7 and stuff like that. So they do have current feeling control structures. But I played the remake of Resident Evil 2 with the tank feeling, just because I wanted that true to the source material experience. And it's not the best, and it certainly adds to the tension, that's for sure. Like, when every bullet is critical.
As I was about to say, that the sort of the new survival aspect where you're having to preserve your ammo, you can't go in all guns blazing, you've got to be, you know, right on the trigger.
Yeah.
That must have been big for you, because obviously...
Oh, man.
For me, coming through games like GoldenEye, where I can hold down the Z button and just, you know, mow through people, having to go through something like that just ramps up the tension tenfold. Because, let's be honest, in first-person shooters, I'm a terrible shot. So this this would have been, you know, my worst nightmare. But were you pretty solid with it from what you
can
remember?
I was pretty good. Like, I hit more than I missed, to say the least. I was pretty good. And you get used to it.
Yeah,
you get used to how the enemies move and their sort of patterns when you are in combat with them. Lickers can be a little harder because they can jump and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the most part, you know the zombie shuffle. You know where to shoot. Obviously, your head.
Yeah.
Head is dead is sort of the best way to go for most enemies.
Yeah.
But you've got to be a little bit more precise as opposed to a torso shot. But
yeah.
When you get like the shotguns and stuff, it becomes a lot more forgivable.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sort of just let them get in the vicinity and fire, and you can do a hell of a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So yeah, but missing those shots just adds to the tension, adds to the fear factor. Where and then you know you see you're starting to maybe take damage, and you're holding your chest as you sort of
the body animations. Yeah, no, like you might have got like leg damage, and you're sort of limping and things like that. That was always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then of course the health. The herbs or herbs?
Yeah, herbs and first aid sprays. Like, you know, obviously that, like if these games probably got made today first instead of into the 90s, it would have been a little bit more controversial. Like you look at, what was it? DayZ got refused classification recently because you could take marijuana
yes, exactly.
to heal yourself. But things like Resident Evil gets away with because it's a herb, I guess, instead of it coming up as marijuana,
a weed
plant
or something.
Weed,
yeah. No, it's always been weird with that sort of thing. That's something I've always wondered as well. It's like, how are they getting away with this sort of rating in that time?
Especially like the classifications boards, like here, especially in Australia, it just seems to be like a dice roll.
Yeah.
With some of these games, like it's just consistently inconsistent. But I loved the health. I love the very finite amount of space you had in your inventory, so you're constantly juggling health and then goddamn puzzle items and keys and which weapons and which ammo.
Oh my god, an incredible cosplay. Just walked past us, taking us by surprise.
He or she was very mean looking.
Yes.
Big club.
Obviously, the big one for Resident Evil 2 is sort of the branching storylines.
Yeah.
Rather than the one main one. Or couple that you'd be sort of replaying through, but
yeah, so you get some great replayability there.
Were you more? Did you rather the Leon side or the Claire side, or the Jill side? It's harder.
I think the Claire side, because you meet little Sherry Birkin, and then you get some experience playing as like just this little like this young child. So there's another layer of fear added on top.
Yeah,
like with Leon, you get Ada Wong, who's like a secret agent, like badass. Femme Fatale coming in there and sort of trying to uncover the truth behind the bloody T-virus and everything else. So it depends on what sort of path you want to play, really, though.
Because
obviously, with Leon, you get the lighter and things like that, where with Claire, you've got sort of that lockpick route. You get some better guns. You get, like, the grenade launcher, where Leon's got the shotgun. So depending on the weapons you're hunting down, like Leon gets the Magnum, Claire gets the bolt rifle or whatever they call it, the bolt caster. So it just depends on what your poison is. Like, Leon can take a little bit more damage. Claire's a slightly faster on the run.
Yeah.
So you got some options there. But you're playing both. Could you get similar, like, obviously, separate stories where they interweave and you can sort of then fill in the blanks when they do separate at times.
It's that intertwining experience. Yeah.
You know? And I love that about games. I love when there is two protagonists and you can experience the same game from different perspectives.
Like, absolutely, yeah.
You know, it gives you so much more meat on the bone as a consumer.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a good way to put it, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
The way that they were able to sort of flesh things out into a more sort of worthwhile story. Obviously, the first game, you know, was a solid story in its own, but I felt like this one, you know, both from the original and the remaster, they felt like there was multiple things that you could do, not only in the one playthrough, but, you know, going back a second time, a third time.
Yeah, and then obviously when you do play through them, you get access to then play as Hunk, one of the special agents members, or you can play as Tofu, like a little block of tofu with Jill Valentine's hat on. Like, they just went full bananas. Like, they went as realistic as you can in a zombie survival horror to then, I'm going to run around as a piece of tofu and kill zombies. Like, and they've carried that through into the current gen, which is great. But I like that, as you were saying then, Matty, like, you've got a pretty decent story from Resident Evil 1, but this starts to dig deeper on that as far as what happened, who's the parties uncovering this, you know, the police chief's on the take here trying to cover up the things that happened at the mansion.
Yeah.
And he's a bad dude, you know, he's got the Sherry Birkin hostage and all this kind of stuff, and a lot of espionage and sort of swerves throughout the story, so it's good fun.
Yeah, no, it's certainly an interesting way to get through things, but yeah, so we might as well sort of start wrapping things up, but really, this game for you, what does it mean, and how do you feel like it's influenced you as a content creator? What's been the biggest sort of takeaway for you that you can really take as a content creator?
I think, like, I guess it came along at just the right time for me. Like, I was 12 years old, 12, 13 when this game came out in 98. So you're at that age when you are starting to mature, I guess, for lack there of a better term, and sort of transition into that adulthood. So it was nice to really sink my teeth into a good survival horror that had some good shooting mechanics, that had some great creatures, some campy dialogue, some good characters that are still relevant today. And it just, I think, shaped my palette for games. Like, it was one of the first real narratives that I really got hooked on.
Yeah.
Before that, it's just a lot of platformers and things and mindless shooters. So it's cool to get invested, like, get genuinely scared of enemies or knowing there's this impending battle coming and just forcing your way to move forward. Like, I copped a bit of that in Resident Evil 1, but I think 2 dialed it up to a nice level.
Yeah.
And brought in some of these new enemies and new mechanics that just had you on edge the whole time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was one of the first games I think I played where I had the PlayStation like in my room, so it was like a nice isolated experience where...
Lights off.
Yeah. There was nothing else in that room but me and the game, so there was no distractions. Mum wasn't in the background and my sister wasn't in the background. It was just me and Resident Evil 2, like, experiencing what Capcom put together.
Mm.
And it was everything I could have wanted and more, really. And I still praise it. And I still remember the news when they confirmed that this remake was coming out. And, like, if I could do a backflip, I would have. I'm not going to because I'm very uncoordinated, but...
Watch the knees, yeah.
Yeah, but it was just everything that I could hope for, this remake, and it was done with so much care.
Mm.
Like, Capcom didn't just mail it in or get some, you know, subcontracting dev to throw this thing together. They did it in-house, they respected the source material, they enhanced and added to the source material.
Mm.
Graphically, it's gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
Combat's still tight, enemies are still freaky as shit, even more so now that you're seeing them in, you know, 4K, you know, the WDR in it, the lighting... the shadow play and the light rays and things when they're around. It's comfort food for me, this game.
Like, yeah.
I can replay this, whether it be OG PlayStation, Xbox One, PlayStation 4. Like, I could happily play this once a year. You know, go back, play through the campaigns for Leon and Claire, try and unlock Hunk, play as Tofu.
Yeah. And really, like, you were sort of saying, obviously, with your sort of first experiences with games like Mario, those sort of more simpler games, this was really, I guess, the first game for you that was something that you really had to pay attention to and really sort of focus on the story rather than, you know, I wouldn't say Mario is a mindless game, but it's a game that you can just jump in and just enjoy first up.
You know, you're going from left to right in Mario.
Yes. This is more of an episodic, or, you know, a game where you've got to really think about what you're doing. That was,
like,
the first sort of game for you for that.
100%. And just, as I said earlier, like, inventory management, trying to work out some of the puzzles. Like, they aren't always just black and white, move this here or there, or you know, get this gemstone from this bloody tiger head and chuck it in something else. Like, they're very mind-wrinkling at times. And when you've also then got a zombie breathing down the back of your neck, you've got 10 bullets in your gun, you've got no herbs, and you're trying to juggle all this stuff, going into new zones in that game, and you're like, okay, what do I need to take with me? You know, trying to avoid buying a game guide or jumping online. Well, not really online back then, but, like, you know, getting the physical guides from
Prima Game Guides. Yeah.
And just trying to navigate your way through it. Like, there was just this sense of accomplishment when I finished that game.
Mm.
Just because, you're constantly juggling everything. The tension, the fear, your inventory, your bullets or lack thereof, the enemies, what rooms have you cleaned, what rooms have you not.
Mm.
And then obviously you've got to go back and forth. A lot of backtracking in Resident Evil games.
Yes.
Which can be a pain in the ass, but it happens.
Yeah.
But it was just everything I needed and everything I love about video games.
Well, it seems like the original game itself was such a crucial experience for a lot of people during that time, but it also shows the importance of a remaster.
Yeah.
And how well and how influential that can be for, you know, an audience, for myself. You know, you're, you know, probably 10 or so
I'm years. 33, thank you very much.
Yeah, okay, so not too far from me then. But it's certainly a great experience for, you know, gamers, both young and old, being able to experience both sides of a game like RE2, not just for, you know, the gameplay and, you know, the strategy, but purely if it's a horror experience you're looking for. Really, this is up there, and it's no wonder why this game is regarded as one of the greatest games of all time.
It's one of the best experiences, I think, in gaming in general, is just when horror and tension is executed the right way. Like, when a game can make you feel things, you know, I think it's done its job, whether it be happy, sad, tears of joy, tears of sorrow, or just tears of fear, which is, like, evidence from Resident Evil. Like, it's a lost art, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's a lot of developers out there still doing it to this day, but Resident Evil just stuck it, and then Resident Evil 2 enhanced that further, and then Resident Evil Nemesis, which I'm hoping for a remake in the near future.
I think there's something in the pipeline. I think they've mentioned it.
I can't wait for some of that. Like, getting chased by the Nemesis as Jill Valentine.
HD, he's going to be...
Oh, my God. Just hearing that, like, stars.
Stars.
And he's got a friggin' rocket launcher on his arm. Like, it's just... Yeah, it's one of my favorite franchises of all time. That and Mass Effect are my two sort of pride and joys from the gaming space.
We might have to get you on sometime in the future to talk about Mass Effect.
Yeah,
because that
you
is
tell
a,
me when.
That
we,
is
we
a classic.
We could talk for days on
yeah,
that.
I think we've outstayed our welcome already. But, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for us to head off. We have had an absolute blast here at PAX Australia. Big thanks to the guys at Audio Technica for bringing us into the booth once again.
They're very handsome and attractive staff members working this booth this year, isn't there?
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
Like, you know, they, people, initially they'd come in to look at the product, but I think they just kind of come in and look at the engineers, the artists, the sales staff, you know, and like, it's the whole would you like fries with that type of situation. It's like...
Well, they provided us with some water, so I feel like that's good enough for us, yeah.
Yeah, it's tasty water too.
Yeah, it is. It's quite
smart. Audio Technica quality. I reckon that water's made in Japan as well.
Clean you know? And crisp. But yes, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the episode. If you'd like to follow us, you can, of course, do so at OPG Pod. And where can people follow you, Brendan?
You can find me pretty well everywhere, socials, gaming platforms, at Brendan8Bit. And you can find us all as a collective at WeAre8Bit or 8bit.net.
Awesome stuff. Of course, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the episode from myself, Matt Tilby, and my special guest, Brendan White. It is goodbye for now. Take care.
Take care.